This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world, and today we're going way out on the darkest and most dangerous edge that we visit. Animal mutilations are back, and this show is not for the squeamish. Linda Moulton Howe goes into a case in Wadi, Kentucky, that is going to curl your hair. You won't have heard much about it anywhere else, which is why you who are listening to the unpaid version of unknowncountry.com's Dreamland should be listening to the paid version. Then you would not hear me suggesting that you subscribe. There are not going to be many commercials in this edition of Dreamland because they're really not appropriate to the material, as you will hear. And again, I suggest if you're squeamish, don't listen to this. But do remember, there is one place in the world that is keeping this question open, that is keeping alive public interest in this problem, and it is very real. Everybody in power on this world and off of it just wants you not to look in this direction. We're gonna look today, and we're gonna look hard. One reporter who loves mysteries is radio's leading science journalist, Linda Moulton Howe. She's an Emmy Award-winning TV producer, documentary filmmaker, and the reporter and editor for EarthFiles.com, the Internet's most respected edge science website. Today, she has a special report for us, very special indeed. We're going to the dark side today. Here she is from Albuquerque, Linda Moulton Howe.
Thanks, Whitley. Well, as I was listening to your introduction, I was thinking about my very first time sitting across from a just freshly retired sheriff, Tex Graves, up in Logan County, Colorado, on my very first meeting as a TV producer and director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, when I was trying my very first time to get to the bottom of why were all of these animals being found in Colorado without blood, without tracks around them, but with the same pattern of excisions. And Sheriff Graves looked at me and he said, and this is a direct quote from 33 years ago, "Linda, the perpetrators are creatures from outer space," close quote. And I still remember feeling as if I were hit by an electric fence when he said those words. I had not been exposed to the concept. Now at the end of the 2012 into 2013 period of so many questions about what our relationship is on this planet to other life in the universe, there are more animal mutilations taking place, not just in the Northern Hemisphere, but the Southern Hemisphere, as we end 2012. As I remember investigating back in 1979 to 1980 when I was first trying to understand what was happening. But there is even an interesting mystery in Kentucky that is different from all of the past decades in which the animals are found bloodless. In Kentucky, in a place called Wadi that is very rural and about 41 miles east of Louisville, between the nights of November 28th and December 5th, 6 goats and 3 calves were mysteriously attacked. All of them were bloodied, but what you are going to hear is still strange, and the attacker is not identified, even if local officials would like to blame it on a dog. On Monday evening, December 17th, some 100 Wadi residents who are afraid and confused by what has been happening in their rural community since the end of November attended a meeting organized by the Wadi magistrate, Tony Carice, to talk about the vicious attack. Some argued that the attacker had to be a large dog, perhaps even a hybridized wolf and dog mix. In the past, a couple of hybrids have been produced in the region, but later put to death, according to local authorities. The Sentinel News quoted Animal Control Director Rusty Newton as having received several reports from residents describing, quote, an unidentified large black hairy shape in the area, and one person said they heard an odd sound, a sound they had never heard anything make before, just indescribable, close quote. After that Wadi town meeting, the next day on December 18th, I talked with 50-year-old Teresa Parker about the mutilation of her five female goats. She had raised each one, called them her girls, and loved them as part of her family with her husband Dale. The damage to each of those goats was so great that she called her veterinarian to put them down out of their misery. So those five female goats, so bloodied by the mysterious attacker that left no tracks, were put to sleep on November 30th. The other three calves and one other goat on Ditto Road survived their attacks. Here now, from her rural home on Ditto Road in Wadi, Kentucky, is Teresa Parker.
From what the authorities said, everyone has pretty much come to the conclusion that it is a dog or dogs, but nobody has seen this animal enough to identify it. There have been reports of a large black hairy thing, but nobody has actually seen the animal to identify it.
Are you the first victim?
No.
Who was first?
Mr. Cox. His animals were cattle. He had two bull calves attacked somewhere between November 28th and the 29th. The faces were chewed up pretty good and their ears. And as of last night, his animals had survived.
All of them had survived?
Yes, yes. And then my animals were attacked on November 30th. There was another attack on 12-3 or 12-4. They say 12-3 or 12-4 because they couldn't pinpoint the exact time.
Where was that?
That was back at Mr. Cox's place.
So he had a second?
Yes, he did. He had a second attack.
And his animals were?
The animal that was attacked the second time was his daughter's goat. That goat, it ripped its ears off. It got part of its face, but he had three donkeys in the pen with this goat, and they're assuming that they possibly scared it off or something scared it off, but he did not have to put any animals down.
Were there claw marks, bite marks in any other part of the bull's bodies?
Not that I am aware of. It's all in the face.
Anybody else?
There was an attack on December 5th on Hickory Ridge Road. That name was not given. It was a calf that was attacked in the face in the same way that Mr. Cox's. And they did not go into detail whether that calf was destroyed or not. But Hickory Ridge Road is less than 1 mile from here.
So back in that same area?
Yes. All the attacks are in this general vicinity, within probably a mile of each other. To my knowledge, my girls were the only ones that had to be put down.
We are talking about attacks in all four cases that are leaving the animals attacked alive.
Yes.
I know it's painful, but you were talking to me in valuable detail of your first discovery.
I got home, I would say, between 2 and 3 in the afternoon, somewhere around that time.
And this was on November 30th?
Yes, it was. I had been home approximately an hour. I went upstairs, opened the curtains to look at my girls. That's just a habit I have.
And when you say girls, for the purpose of this interview, you're talking about
my five goats.
Five goats, all female.
All female.
How old?
Molly was born on March the 6th, 2007. She was my first one. Nana was born shortly thereafter, within a couple of months. I had a set of twins, Katie and Lucy, and they were born probably 6 months after Molly. And Bella was my youngest.
So on November 30th, between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you have come home, you've gone upstairs, and you're looking out a window out onto
their pen. Their pen is a couple of hundred feet from the house. In the summertime, with the windows open, I'll yell out at the window at Molly, and she'll bay back, if that makes sense.
Right. Saying hello.
Yes.
So what happened on November 30th?
All right. When I looked out the window, I noticed Katie. She was the one laying closest to the fence. And I noticed she didn't look right. She was bloody. And I thought that she had broken off a horn because they like to play pretty rough. I know that if a goat breaks a horn off, if it's deep enough, they will bleed to death. So I ran downstairs, and when I got halfway up the hill, I noticed all five of them were covered in blood. And I started screaming, and I called my husband, and I told him, you need to get home immediately. Something's happened to the girls. When I got up, even with their pen, I saw that their faces, they were just a bloody mess. They were just covered in blood. All of the girls were primarily white. Molly was solid white. And when I say they were covered in blood, they were covered in blood. And I went around and opened the gate and ran over to them. I went to Molly first. Her face from her eyes down was basically just gone. The skin had been ripped off. There was bone and teeth sticking out. Her tongue was gone. Her ears were gone. Her face, it was ripped off. She still had her eyes. My neighbor had heard me screaming, and he came to the fence, and, oh, my God, you know, what happened? I had no idea, and I said, I've got to put them down. I don't have a choice. They were all destroyed.
Can you describe what happened to the other four goats besides Molly?
The very same thing.
They all looked identical.
Pretty much, yeah. One of Katie's eyes was punctured, but it's the same thing from their eyes down to their snoots. Their snoots had been ripped off. Their teeth were, you could see their teeth. You could see their bones. You could see their nasal cavities. Their ears were gone.
Did you notice at the base of the ears that were gone, whether it looked like it was a somewhat circular excision or torn hide?
Like it had been ripped off.
Jagged hide.
Yes.
Now, the eyes on Molly, you could see that both of the eyeballs were there.
Yes. The only one that I saw that had any damage to the eye was Katie.
Were the animals trying to make any sound when they saw you?
They couldn't. They were kind of a groan. They all five have horns. So when I got to Molly, I took her horn, her horns in my hand, and turned her face, so that I could look at her and so that she could see me and just, you know, kind of a sound.
Hmm.
They couldn't vocalize. And that's one thing. They were very vocal.
And do you think that their inability to vocalize anything is because all five had their tongues removed deep in the throat?
Yes. That and their nasal cavities were exposed.
So you are looking at bone from the eyes down how far?
Well, their lips were pulled off. Their tongues were ripped out. The sides of their faces were gone. You have hanging flesh.
Did it go down into the neck?
No, ma'am. There was no damage on any of the girls below the ears, from the ears back. There were no marks on their udders. There were no marks on their stomachs, their backs, their tails, or legs. No marks other than their face from the ears forward.
They're in a pen about 200 feet from the back of your house.
Yes.
How would anything have been able to get to them?
We don't know. From what the vet thought, that the dog climbed the gate. Because I walked the fence, the veterinary walked the fence, my husband walked the fence, one of our friends walked the fence. There were no marks indicating that anything went under the fence anywhere. We walked every inch of that fence.
So for violence to have taken place in that pen with your five goats, something would have to enter that pen?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You're saying that the only place that something could have entered was at the gate?
Over the gate, not through the gate, because the gate was secure when I went up there Friday.
How high was it?
The gate is about, I'm 5'5", and it's chest high.
Okay, so it's between 4 and 5 feet high to the top of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
If there were no tracks in your pen, doesn't that eliminate the presence of a dog?
It was very dry when the girls were attacked. We'd had no rain. We looked for tracks. one thing somebody mentioned, you know, maybe blood on the feet. There should have been tracks, but we looked and we could not see any tracks.
Was there any sign of struggle from the five goats?
In the barn, there is a blood splatter on one of the walls, so where you can see they jerked away or something, but there is a blood splatter in the barn.
I understand you had a veterinarian come very quickly.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
What did the vet say?
I said, what could have done this? And could it have been coyotes? Because we do have coyotes out here. And she said she did not think so because a coyote will kill to eat. And if that would have been the case, the coyote would have killed one, drug it off, ate it, come back the next night for the next one. Her feelings were it was a dog.
Why a dog?
Because a dog does not kill to eat or protect itself. A dog will kill or maim for the sport of it.
But you've been there 2 decades and nothing like this has ever happened before.
No, ma'am. It has not that I'm aware of.
And you're living in the same area that you've lived
ma'am.
In all these 2 decades with the same coyotes and dogs and people and everything.
Right.
So what is the perspective of the authorities and all of you that have been affected about why something this violent and strange, not killing your animals, but leaving them mutilated and bloody, why would this have occurred?
They don't have any answers for that. They really don't. You know, there was talk about possible hybrids in the area. I don't remember if it was the sheriff or the Fish and Wildlife or the animal control gentleman that said that several years ago there were reports of hybrid animals in this area, people raising them. And they mentioned one case that this person had 2 hybrids and they were put down.
And the hybrid would be a hybridization of?
A wolf.
A wolf and a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And why would they do that?
I don't honestly know.
There are no known hybrids of wolf and dog in that area now?
That's what we were told, yes.
They aren't there because the hybrids were killed. They were put down.
That's what we were told.
And so the mystery is, what animal or creature would be able to do this, able to get into a locked pen and not leave obvious tracks beyond the blood inside of your barn? And to have done this between November 28th and December 5th, all in the same Ditto Road area in which the 3 of you who have been affected are only about a mile from each other?
Right.
Is there anything about Ditto Road that would make it the focus of some kind of dog or creature?
The only thing that I can possibly think of is that everyone on this road, with the exception of probably 2 people, have livestock, cattle, goats, horses.
And if it is some hybridization that none of you know about, it's capable of continuing to do such violence unless it has been killed.
Absolutely. Once a dog gets the taste of blood, they will not quit.
If anyone listening to this Dreamland program or looking at Earth Files has further information about these Waddy, Kentucky livestock attacks, please contact the Shelby County Sheriff's Office at area code 502-633-4324. And Earth Files welcomes viewer comments about these unusual animal attacks and mutilations. All requests for confidentiality are respected, and my email address is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And Whitley, one more related update. On the other side of the Northern Hemisphere, on a farm near Worcester, England, police are investigating a series of attacks on sheep also occurring in November through the first 2 weeks of December 2012. One of the victimized farmers, a Mr. Acock, checked his flock of 140 sheep in their barn on December 12th. To his horror, he found what was left of one of his ewes. His brother, William Acock, told the London Farmers Weekly, quote, "Whoever did this must have cornered the sheep, held it down, killed it, and then skinned it before taking the carcass. All that was left was the bottom jaw, which was snapped off and the sheep's hide, close quote. The Farmers Weekly printed a photograph of the sheep hide found in the barn, and I also have that photograph in my earthfiles.com report about this English update along with the Wadi, Kentucky mutilations. The Wadi, Kentucky sheep were, and the calves, the goats and the calves were bloody. But in England, as always in other animal mutilations over the past half century that I have investigated since 1979, there is no blood. That has always been one of the puzzling characteristics of the mutilation sites. And this photograph in England shows a perfectly clean sheep's hide, no blood, and yet the entire meat body of the sheep is gone, except for that cracked off jaw. The official explanation by the police so far there is that the sheep in Worcestershire County, England, have been attacked by, quote, meat thieves, close quote, people attacking and killing for the meat. But how is that possible without leaving blood at the scene of the sheep deaths in England and just as mysterious in Wadi, Kentucky? How is it possible to have killed the goats and the bull calves and have blood on their faces, but not bloody tracks in the pen, for example, at Teresa Parker's, where five goats were killed, mutilated so badly that they had to be killed in the same day in a locked pen? This, Whitley, and all Dreamland listeners, is what has fueled me for 33 years to try to understand what Sheriff Tex Graves told to me back in the fall of 79, that the perpetrators of the bloodless animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. What could possibly be at work in Wadi, Kentucky, that would also be mysterious in its attack, not leaving struggle marks, and yet leaving all of these animals with so much blood and so much ripped from their faces? At least four of them survived.
And now I'm supposed to ask questions. Linda. Okay. Well, a number of things have been going through my mind as I've listened to you talk. In both of these cases, there's just enough anomalous evidence to make us wonder if the police explanations are correct. And let's deal first with the one in the United States.
All right.
We have had, over the years, numerous reports and have talked about this on Dreamland any number of occasions about what I call the Elmendorf beast, that strange animal that was first seen, incidentally, on the Nids Ranch. A photograph of it was taken. That's the ranch that was bought by Robert Bigelow, that because it had so many anomalous events taking place on it, and a number of scientists spent a lot of time there. There was a book written about it by Colm Kelleher called The Skinwalker Ranch, if you're interested in it. It's quite extraordinary, the story. In any case, that first photograph of one of those creatures was there, and now they have been photographed in South Texas. I, at one point, got a hold of a carcass and had it analyzed by biologists who said that the skull was not a coyote skull. It was not a dog. It was not, in fact, any known form of canine, although it was appeared to be a canine of some kind, not one that he had ever seen. I sent the DNA to a laboratory in California. They initially telephoned me a few days later and said, "This is very strange. Where did you get this? We can't identify this DNA." There followed 6 months of silence, during which time I wrote them a number of letters and emails and received no response until finally I received in the mail a document, which I have to this day, stating that it was a coyote. And when I inquired as to why they had at first said that they didn't know what it was, they never responded at all, meaning to me that somebody got to them. They were told to tell me it was a coyote, even though that's not what it was. In fact, that's, I think, where we are with that. Okay.
Yes, and is there a strange creature that may have been genetically concocted
yes.
to work on this planet? And when you go back to the Sherman Ranch was the name in Utah. I was the reporter who did the first interview with Art Bell on Coast to Coast with Mr. Sherman, the farmer.
Right. You're referring to what became known as the Nids Ranch.
And that came later because Robert Bigelow heard my interview, and that's what sparked his interest and in why he went to see if he could buy this ranch. What I wanted to share now on Dreamland is a very important piece of that interview that has haunted me ever since I talked with Mr. Sherman on Coast to Coast. There were the lights, there were the beams, there were craft. There were small lights at the farmhouse. There were so many high strangeness and lots of animal mutilations in that region. One night, in his frustration and growing anger, Mr. Sherman was trying to see what was out in one of his pastures through a hunting gun scope. And he could see what he thought was some kind of a craft with windows. And in his frustration and anger at that moment, he ran out to wherever this thing was. And he told me in this incredible firsthand account of running up under something that is clearly not on the ground. It is hovering in the air. And he, Mr. Sherman, is looking up through what he described as some sort of a window, and that there were two humanoid-looking beings, one short and one tall. And he said that suddenly in his mind, Mr. Sherman's mind, he could hear as if they were talking, but it was telepathic. And that from Mr. Sherman's point of view, he heard one of them talking to the other mind to mind because their lips weren't moving either. No point in trying to tell him what we're doing because he would never understand it.
You know what, Linda? I think that's as close as we've ever come to an explanation for part of this. But when you, and I can understand the cattle mutilations have such a regularity to them,
yes.
such a strangeness. There is something being done genetically, perhaps, I just don't know. And I suspect that he's probably, that voice was telling the truth that we can't understand because it's too far in advance of where we are. But this is different. These stories are horrifying and they are about brutal animal-like events. And I have to wonder if someone isn't playing games, genetically experimenting here, and something has gotten away or has been released into our environment to see how it functions and or how it survives, because the things that happened here in this country certainly suggest the presence of some kind of an animal. I mean, it doesn't seem at all like the cattle mutilations, but an exceptionally brutal, even crazed animal.
The recent violences definitely are not like the classic animal mutilations that have no blood. And I hope that the listeners will hear these words, because often I don't think people absorb this very important fact. When there are no tracks around a body that is lying either on its back or on the side, with an ear missing, eye missing, jaw flesh, tongue removed deep within the throat, some form, whether male or female, of the sexual organs, either an entire udder taken, or just the teats taken, or the penis taken, the testicles taken, or all combination, leaving ovals and square, just high, deep excisions on the belly. And in almost every case, the rectal area is cored out approximately 4 to 6 inches wide, extending on average about 10 to 14 inches into the body of the animal, and in females, nearly every time that the rectal tissue has been taken, the vaginal tissue has been taken as well. This is what Linda Howe, I've gone out on dozens of these cases over the last 3.5 decades, and I have excised tissue for a pathologist in Denver to look at under a microscope. So on at least more than a dozen of these animals, I have been there with a scalpel, with formalin solution to excise the mutilator's tissue, as well as my own cut and identifying it as such, and collecting soil and plants for study biophysically. And when you have seen, as I have so many times, the animal looks as if it should get up because it is so fresh and there is no blood. And when you look on face powder dry soil around, that any mark, whether it's me or a rabbit, and there's nothing around these bodies. I still remember Sheriff Tex Graves, who told me the perpetrators were creatures from outer space. He said, Linda, we all began to realize in the early 70s that because we couldn't find any tracks, let alone blood, these animals have to be being put down onto the site where they are found. How else could this occur? I'm one of the single most dramatic cases, and I got this directly from the deputy sheriff who did the investigation. I never will forget it. It was a bull. It weighed about 1,900 pounds. It was on its back with all four legs straight up in the air, and it had horns. And the horns were embedded in the dry, face powder dry dust. And the sheriff deputy told me that as they walked toward these legs, you hardly ever see an animal lying on its back with all four legs up in the air to begin with. And as they approached, there was no grass, none. There's no pasture. This animal was put down on its back, completely surrounded by dust, powder, soil. They are not seeing one track, and yet, when they finally approach this animal, one of the ears is gone, one eye was gone, the tongue was removed deep within the throat, half of the jaw flesh was gone, this was a male, the penis and testicles had been removed with a clean oval on the belly, and the rectum had been cored out. There was not a drop of blood. The hair on that animal was completely dry. There's not a single track. And that's why Sheriff Tex Graves said, Linda, that's why we have to look to the skies. And when you've talked to as many ranchers as he had who had described seeing glowing circles of light in the sky, beams coming down into pastures, even two cowboys who said they saw strange creatures float up in the sky over a corral fence where they later found a mutilated animal. These are the reasons why Tex Graves and other people in law enforcement began looking to the sky and saying whatever is doing the animal mutilations around the world, because this is a world phenomenon going all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century, that the lack of tracks, that is something that people who say it has to be humans, it has to be animals, they are ignoring one of the most critical pieces that law enforcement was dealing with right from the beginning. Lack of tracks, including the animal's own tracks, around bloodless carcasses with the similar excisions.
Amazing. They just can't face it. Or they have to lie because somebody is telling them to do so. Linda Moulton Howe has been researching this strange, dark subject since the 1970s. You heard, she knows what's going on. In the subscriber area, we are going to take a deeper look at this. What is the big picture? Where are we now? Where are we going? Is the dark side the only side to the close encounter experience? Should we be very afraid? Or is there yet more to it, to this most complex of all human, at least human, experiences? Thank you very much for listening to Dreamland. And if you are a subscriber, do not miss what is about to happen in the subscriber area.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and our family of subscribers. Our news editor is Ann Streber. Our science reporter is Linda Moulton Howe. Our webmaster is Daniel Stiegel. And I'm your Dreamland announcer, Brian Arnold. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.